Righty, our session is now recording, guys. And when it's ready, I will load it up on the page for week one. So it will be there for you to go and download, to listen to it again, take notes, etc., etc. What I'm going to do, the way I want to approach these questions. I want to prioritize questions that link directly to this week's session, and then the next step is the questions that I do not address. It's either I need more info on those, which means I will text the individual who sent me the question to get more details. Maybe there are specifics that may be sensitive that they may not want on a recording. So I'll get all that info before I can answer. And then what I'll do, I'll just do a recording, just answering maybe one or two or all of those questions at once. I'll just load that as well before Monday on that page. But I'll let you guys know that if and when I've done that, to say I've added more content, go check it out. Another thing, questions that I don't answer today will either be questions that I will still have, because this is week one, so there's still a lot of stuff that's still coming in terms of the content that I'll be sharing. So they may be questions that I feel can wait until we get to those to that part of the content. So I'll park them. In fact, I'll just make a note for myself to kind of put them in the right folder on my side to say they belong to week four or week five. But one thing I want to say is that I really appreciate the questions that you guys are sending, and I don't want you to hold back. Just keep them coming. Because it's your questions that enrich the program. On my side, I'm just one person, and everything I'm sharing is what I think. It's basically based on my own assessment. Let me put it that way. It's just me deciding this needs to come before that, and this is how much of this I should share, based on my own human biases. But there may be things that you may wish that I could go a little bit deeper in terms of addressing. So your questions will help me do that. And that way it enriches the program for you, but it also enriches the program for other people who are in the program and vice versa. The questions that other people ask that you may not have thought of, when I go deeper in terms of answering them, it also benefits you. That's why I felt it so important for questions to be addressed in this collective way than for me to just answer directly to individuals, especially within the first 6 weeks. Because I know that part of being part of a group like this is the one of the big benefits is that you don't just learn from me, but people also learn from each other. So in that, I'm just trying to say your questions they make the program. So please don't hold back. I know that to you guys, don't hold back and don't feel like you are kind of bombarding me. But I know you two, just judging by your messages, that you're totally comfortable with that, sending me questions, of course, answering the exercises that I gave you. So I really, really appreciate that. Before I even go into this, I mean, because week one is like the first day at school. I was nervous, when I sent you guys the first piece of info or the first lesson, because I didn't know how it would land. It's almost like being a comedian, when you're doing your first show on stage, you're doing your first jokes. You're nervous, you're looking at this audience, you're like, I've never done these jokes before. I don't know how these jokes are gonna land. You're hoping that people are gonna laugh. So I had the same feeling with the first lesson. They say, it's going to be, I don't know how you guys are going to receive this, but I look forward to this, today's session, not only because of the questions, but also just a minute. Some of you have already texted me your feedback on the content, but I'd just like you guys to unmute yourselves and just tell me, how did you experience the content? Was it too low level? Was it just right? Or was it too high level? So that I can always keep that in mind as I go. How did it feel, you know, when you received the content and when you experienced what I was teaching? How was that one for you?
Yeah, from my side here, I found it to be a very good introduction to sponsorships, partnerships, deals. I think you gave a very nice context. So from a size or quantity of information point of view, I think you provided the right quantity of information, as well as a very nice intro. So I'm coming into this whole thing kind of as an empty pot, and very much open to learning and a sponge. And so I didn't find any of the info to be, let's say, too basic. I found it pitched at the right level, I particularly enjoyed the request for questions at the end. You know, the 20 top questions, and then also you know, what we are looking for. So it was pitched at the right level, and then I also think you invited all of the kind of basically asking for what our wants are from this course. I think it was great.
Cool. Thank you, Ash. And so?
Tensia, my take on the video especially was that I found it very, very interesting. Very interesting, very enlightening. What I picked up very quickly was that it needed me to reposition myself. I think I shared with you just the thinking that I have of what I need to quickly unlearn so that I can benefit from the sessions. I'm wired very differently from what is needed for me to be the person that I need to be. So that's why I was saying, I hope I get to that point quick enough, because we are not having a 5-year course. So I've gathered certain ways of doing things in the 2 decades that I've been in this industry and in the service industry. So particularly the approach of coming as a service provider, there's a certain way that I do things. There's a certain way that I approach conversations and people, and there's a certain way that I look to get received and to come away from conversations. So for me, Njoy, if you say no, hey, it's a big deal, like it's a no. So I need to go at home and understand, okay, why is this client or this prospect not really understanding where I'm coming from? So it's a matter of really just decoding a lot of things that I know to be true, so that I can get to where I need to. So I'm very excited that I'm going to be exposed to this, because it's really going to help me in many ways than one, basically. Where I thought it was also very challenging for me was when I needed to ask questions after watching the video. If I was asked to ask the questions of what are you expecting, what do you want, I was going to ask you 50 different questions because I know why I wanted this course. I've shared with you. I know what I thought it would give me. But after watching the video, all the questions that I was writing were, okay, I already know the answer to this particular question. So it was very, very difficult. And a lot of it had to do with, okay, here is the neediness coming. here is the real show coming. And I just think that it's going to be an interesting journey because I really need to embrace newness so that I can unlearn and learn. So I really look forward in those terms of saying there's a lot of things that I've started to do in ways that perhaps I shouldn't have done them. Even in the way that I sell my services, I've gone out with, here is a cheap coaching approach, and I've not sold value, certainly. So I'm looking forward in walking this path to understand how I can sell the value that I know I have and I can deliver. Yeah, so it's a whole lot of unlearning for me, which I'm excited to be exposed to.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks, guys. I'm just pulling out the PDF with the slides from this week, basically. Some of you, I just kind of skimmed through the questions. I saw that some of the questions were specific to some of these, like some of the things that you just touched on, Phil, just now. So I just want to make sure I've got these things in front of me. I'm going to switch off the video because the lighting is not great. I've got like light behind me and the other light is very far. So I'm just going to switch off the video and then we're just going to chat since you guys are also not on video anyway. So. All right. Okay, cool. And it will also make it easy for me to just navigate my screen without wondering whether I'm visible on video or not. Alrighty, thank you guys for the feedback. Thank you so much, I appreciate. So the way we're gonna do this, I wanna, because your questions are on WhatsApp and also on email. So what I'm gonna do, you guys have your questions actually in front of you. Why am I making this hard for myself? Maybe let's do this. We're gonna deal, as I said, with this week's questions. And you, I see you guys have already asked these questions. Why don't we just do that? Why don't you read me your questions? We'll just alternate. We'll go Ashraf, and then we just go through these questions as you guys have written them. So I'm flying blind. I haven't really seen your questions, which makes it that much more interesting and that much more fun to have to answer these, you know, literally on my feet, as it were. I'm also standing as I'm doing this recording. So why don't we do that? So let's do that. You guys find your questions as you've written them, but we're only focusing on that questions about this week's questions. Anything else that you've already sent me, I'll deal with it with you on WhatsApp if I need more information. But if I'm happy with what you asked, I'll just do a recording and then I'll let you know that it's here and then I'll just let everybody know that it's been loaded. Okay, let's go. Question one.
From?
You are already on the mic, so let's
okay.
go with you.
Okay, all right. See, so, as you know, I am in the process of basically building this business from the ground up.
Yeah.
Which is an advisory and coaching solutions business.
Okay.
Interestingly, my questions in regards to this sponsorship call, it pertained more to the advisory part of the business.
Okay.
A lot of the, what I realized in kind of like refining my target market is that.
Is that your question? Wait, Ash, is that how you wrote this question?
Yeah. Well, so there's a couple of questions, right?
I just want, in the interest of time, yes. Because I did toy around the idea of getting like people to introduce themselves, but I decided I want to do that at the end so that we could just get as many questions as we can. So what yeah. I would like The approach for both of you guys, what I'd like you to do, just literally read them as you wrote them.
Okay. So you want me to read all of it?
No, just read question one.
Okay, question one.
So that I can answer.
So how do I find companies which are best fit for sponsoring or partnering in affordable housing?
Okay, is that for this week? Does it relate to the stuff that we covered this week specifically?
Well, your question was very broad.
No, I said my question was, let me repeat. My question was, I would like you guys to just read to me, because I remember my exercise had four questions.
Yes.
Sorry, Sia, to jump in.
I think the confusion with Asha is you are asking, we should be asking you questions from task three, from the last task, because the other ones, I think he's asking from question one, from exercise one.
Oh, I see.
Exercise three, where so it relates to the actual video.
Okay, the questions I'm looking for, if you look at the exercises that I gave you on the web, exercise number four says, watch this training again, then write down and email the questions you would like answered or clarified for you this week, meaning questions that relate to this week's content. Maybe I didn't phrase the question in a clear way. I just want questions that relate. Remember, I taught you the 11 commandments this week, and I also taught you about the common factor of successful deal makers. So anything that leads to that, that's just what I want to deal with right now.
Is it
clear now, guys? And sorry for the confusion.
Yes,
I know that. So one of your questions pertained to.
So for an example, see, I mean, my question was, how do I reverse the damage that I've already done of commoditizing my services?
Yes, that was one of your questions. And I did talk about that
in the commandments. So that would have been, yeah.
Maybe while you are just sorting through your questions, maybe let me go with this question that you're asking.
Okay, and then mine, simply as it relates to this week, because you mentioned as one of the things is one, we need to do research on our sponsors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the work that I want to do revolves around like almost like industry transforming work. So whether it is inclusionary or affordable housing, or whether it is transforming the education sector or making the education sector more inclusive for like special needs education, right? My thing is, how do I find companies which are a best fit for sponsoring or partnering these kinds of initiatives? So what is the kind of research that I need to do to be able to identify companies that are good fit for sponsoring or partnering these kinds of initiatives?
Okay, cool, great questions. Let me tackle both your questions. I'm just opening up. I remember your question, though, because I saw it in the email you sent me. So, how do I reverse the damage that I have already done of commoditizing my services? Great question. Okay. So, let's start unpacking the whole thing about commoditizing things, or what makes things commodities. What makes things commodities is really this idea, when somebody gets to hear or learn or read or whatever just hear about your service. And the first thing that comes to mind is, oh, I know somebody else who does this or who sells this. What that does is that it opens up your offering to at least two things. One, it gets pigeonholed. You know, they already have a little box where they can put your offering. That'll be the first thing. The second thing is that it can now be compared to so-and-so's offering. In fact, this question applies to both of you guys because both of you have coaching businesses. Well, before we close, we'll just take just a few minutes and you guys can just talk about what you do so that each of you can know who what the other is doing. Okay, so those are two things that happen first. One, because human brains, our brains are always looking to put things in compartments. When you hear a piece of information, anything, you're already, your brain is sifting, looking, where can I put this? Where can I put this? Where can I put this? So that's what happens. When we hear, oh, I'm a coach. Oh, interestingly, I was talking to somebody today who's a Forex trader. So if somebody hears, I'm a Forex trader, already, you guys have feelings about that, whatever they may be. You know, I'm talking to you specifically. You already have feelings depending on what you think of, you know, Forex traders, what you've heard, what you've read, what you've experienced. If you invested your money with a Forex trader and you lost money, you probably have a whole idea about the whole group of people called Forex traders. If you yourself have, let's say, learned how to trade Forex and you've done well for yourself, you probably have a completely opposite idea. So that's what happens. And then the next thing, as I said, is the whole thing of comparison. For instance, if I were to go out and sell a bottle of two liter bottle of Coca-Cola for 150 Rand, nobody would buy that under normal circumstances. Because they would be like, I can get this at Woody's or Pick and Pay for 20 Rand, right? So why would I pay 150 for it? So that's a commodity, you know, because there's a market price for it that is accepted by everybody, you know, that's what they expect to pay for that thing. So let's come back now to your type of businesses as coaches. You know, how does coaching become a commodity, considering that, you know, every coach is different? You know, they may be coaching in the same space, but the reality is that they also bring themselves in the equation, which makes the whole experience unique. But what makes coaching a commodity is exactly that. It's coaching. You know, when somebody says, "What do? You say, "I'm a coach." You know, again, depending on what they know about coaches, what their experiences are, automatically they have feelings about it. You know what I mean? And that pigeonhole, it goes straight to a certain pigeonhole. And then the next thing is, oh, I know what coaches charge because I had a coach too. I was paying 200 Rand per hour. So now to that person, it's a commodity that can only be bought at 200 Rand per hour or 1,000 Rand per hour. But there's always this per hour thing, interestingly, with something like coaching. So how then do we move our offerings from commodity to being viewed as this special, I need to have this thing offering? There are a number of things. The first is redefining the offer. What I mean by redefining the offer, it starts with understanding that your offer is not a statement of what you do. Your offer is not a statement of what you do. People say, I'm a coach. I'm a coach. You know, that's what I do. I coach, right? But what your offer really is, it's I'm trying to find the right word to just sum this thing up. But it's not a statement of what you do, but what it is, it speaks to the outcomes that people get for having experienced what you do. So that's one element. Another element, it also speaks to the cost of not having it. And I'll break those things down in case there's confusion. It's not a statement of what you do. It's not like going to a party and someone says, what do you do, right? People tend to just blurt out a word or a phrase or, oh, this is what I do, right? That and most people think that when they talk to a potential client, that's what they are offering. I'm offering accounting services, I'm offering this. But the reality is that your offer has two components to it. It's the outcome that happens as a result of people experiencing what you offer. So that's the first thing. The other thing is the cost of not having it. Because, and all of these things, they relate to who? The difference between these two things is that when you talk about this, when it's the statement of what you do, it's all about you. But when we say outcomes, it's not about you, it's about them. And when we say the cost of not having it, it's also not about you, it's about them. So everything now that you're offering gets evaluated by the other party on the basis of their own need. Here we are about that word again, need, neediness, and all of that stuff. So the worst position you can be in is being needy. But it's okay for you to induce need on the other side because you want them to take action. Not necessarily because you want to trick them to buy what you've got, but you want them to feel compelled by their own reasons. So let me unpack this thing of results or outcomes and the whole thing about cost. Outcomes is that if you think about what you are offering right now, your coaching services, what are some of the highest outcomes that people can have as a result of learning from you, being mentored by you, being coached by you, being guided by you, being led by you, because all of this is leadership, being led by you. What outcomes can they get? Can you start to feel, as I'm asking this question, can you already feel, I'm sure you're starting to have some feelings about what you do that, oh my God, if people knew what I have and if people got what I've got, if they can get this, it would change their lives, right? So now what it does is it's starting to elevate the value of what you've got, even to your own mind. When you think about what are some of the highest outcomes. For instance, for me, in our standard programs that we offer, whenever I think about what we do, I just see millions that people can make because our clients, that's what they are doing. Every month, our clients are making millions of rands by following the things that I've taught them over. We've literally dug businesses off the grave and turned them into million-rand companies in weeks, in some cases months. So for when I think about outcomes, you know what I mean? I can see that. Now that automatically elevates the value of what you've got. Now let's move along. Let's move back again to the issue of the thing about cost. What is the cost of not having this? The cost of not having what, of somebody not having what you guys are offering is that their lives are not going to change. So whatever pain they are experiencing right now that needs your service is a pain that's not going to change. They're going to stay with the lingering pain. The same way you guys made a choice to be in the program, you know, because what would have been the cost? The real cost was not what you paid to be in here. The higher cost, actually what you paid to be in here is less than the cost you would have incurred for not being here. Because by being here, you're gonna learn how to get partnerships, how to get sponsorships, and that could translate to hundreds of thousands of rands a year, it could translate to millions of rands, but over the period of your life, it will definitely translate to millions. If you think about the remainder of your life, if you just implement some of the things you're gonna learn here, even if you just do it very casually, for the rate of your life, it will amount to millions. But what you paid to be here is nowhere near millions. So that's the value. But what would have been the cost? Assuming that you didn't get what you're going to get here. The cost would have been exactly what you are missing out on. The millions that I'm talking about for the remainder of your life, you would definitely miss out on that. But on the worst case scenario is that, assuming you didn't find anything that actually helps you, let's say you end up getting into other programs, and I'm not saying my programs are the best, I'm just, for the sake of this, I'm just using an analogy, that you get into programs where, you know, you pay a lot of money and you actually don't even learn anything of great value, or you don't even get into any programs, you just continue with your life the way it was last month, the way it was last year, whatever lingering frustrations you may have been feeling at that time. I'm using the word frustrations very casually because it doesn't necessarily mean you were frustrated, but whatever lingering desires you had about changing certain things, whatever your motivations were, those would continue to linger until you do something which may require you to pay to actually get that done. I don't know if that makes sense. So that's the thing about your offer. So the moment you start looking at what you do from with those goggles of what could be the potential outcome for the people I help, and what would be the cost if they don't have this thing. Now, that's the conversation you have with them, rather than the conversation of, I'm a coach, can I coach you? Or, I'm a coach, this is my program. You start giving people bullet points of what you're gonna do. What you're gonna do for people is merely a vehicle that's gonna take them from point A to point B. Right now, here we are on week one. You guys don't know what I've got for you on week two, on week three, on week four, on week five. You know, because as much as the part of your heart or your brain that wants to know what's coming, but in the bigger scheme of things, it's irrelevant. It's actually irrelevant in the bigger scheme of things, because you are here in full trust that, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. He's been doing it for 15 years. He will know. He's leading us. We are letting him lead the program. Even though there's that part of you that says, but I want to know what's happening next week. I want to know what week four will be about. But it has no bearing on the outcome that you're going to get during and even after the program. It's just the craving, if I may put it that way. So in most cases, when people make decisions to buy from you, they actually don't need to know the specifics of your program. And in most cases, when people start asking you about those specifics, like what's going to happen this week, what's going to happen next week, those people are usually people who are not going to buy. They are people who are usually going in their brain looking for what they'll be missing if they don't get into your program or into your coaching. People who will get into your coaching, they make decisions rather quicker, you know, because they're like, the outcome that this person is promising is an outcome that I want. And you know what? It's time. I'm going. You know, but people who keep sending you questions every day, what happened? So how about this? How about that? It's because they're evaluating to say, if I don't get in this program, what will I miss? Then you tell them what's going to be there. I probably already know that. Oh, I can do that. Even though they don't even know the detail, they just know the title of what you're going to be covering. So commodity, and so whenever you start to talk too much about the specifics of what you do, you are actually commoditizing your program yourself than when you focus on outcomes and focus on the cost of not having. I hope I've kind of tackled that question that you had there. So, and then moving to your question, Ashraf, of identifying, I think your question was about identifying the right kind of partners for this space of like education institutions, particularly for special needs children, because that's a great passion that you've got. And I know you also happen to sit on the board of directors of a school for special needs children. So the way I want to tackle your question is a bit broader than the way you asked it. The way I would like you guys to look at these partnerships is to actually, ideally what I would like by the end of this, I want you guys to kind of have what I would call the partnership goggles, which means almost everything about your business, every little piece of it, every little corner, every product, every offering, everything that costs you money is screaming for partnership. So it's not even about the totality of the business that I'm in this industry. I like this question because it's a question that I've been asked a lot. Will these partnerships work for me if I'm in industry X? You know, and my answer is, of course. You know, why would I say that? Because it's not about the industry first and foremost. It's actually about specific things within the industry. Let me use an example. A school, first of all, let's start at the school level. You know, there are already nonprofits. There are already companies that have got CSI programs that are targeting education. That's already in the broader sense. There are already companies that fund education through their CSI programs. So what would I do if that was the case? I would start getting a CSI handbook, which gets published, I think, there are quite a few CSI handbooks. I'll try and find the details of the CSI handbooks that I've had over the years, where there's a list of South African companies and what they spend money on, how much do they spend on CSI. So I would go straight, I would zoom into those companies that are focusing on education. So that's the broader area. Now, let's drill a little bit deeper there. What do schools need? Mind you, I'm not saying what do special needs schools need. I'm saying what do schools need? One of the things schools need is probably, you know, up-to-date computers or more computers. So now every school could benefit from that. Then it becomes a case of how do I align what my school stands for with, let's say, the values of Microsoft, of, let's say, Vodacom, for that matter, because the tech and the whole ITC sector is kind of morphing into, you know, the tech companies and software companies and cell phone companies. There's a whole line of overlap there. Look at Vodacom. Vodacom has built computer labs, for instance, at certain schools, provided computers, offer data. It's easy for them to do that because this is basically their product. You know what I mean? They've got devices. They've got relationships with manufacturers of devices. The data is actually their own thing. They make it out of thin air, this thing we call data that they sell to us. So it's easier for them to give that to a school than to actually give money. In fact, they can even top that up with a check. You know, they can even build a structure within that school. So it becomes a case of let's dissect the needs of the special needs school. If let's say there's special equipment that the schools need, I'm going to use an example of wheelchairs, for instance. You know, it could be anything really. Then it becomes a case of who manufactures wheelchairs, and how can them sponsoring a school or partnering with the school be good for publicity, for their, probably their newest wheelchairs, so that they can, whoever they sell these to, because I don't know how that line of that industry works. If they sell them, I know that people do actually buy their own wheelchairs. So, but there's competition even there. You know, there's this brand and that brand. What if that brand aligns itself with a certain school? In fact, as we go through the program, I'm going to use my own deals that I've done to illustrate these points. You know, what deal did I do with which company? Why did I do it that way? What was the benefit to the company? You know, so that you could start to dissect, because that's really what I'd like you guys to do, to start to really drill into specifics of the various needs of your organizations, of the nonprofits that you support. And also another thing you can do for special needs schools, I would also look at who's already supporting the school. Because if there are already companies that are already, let's say, donating money to the school, donating resources to the school, I would reach out to them to say, you know, you're already supporting our school in this way, in this way, in this way. As a board member, these are some of the things that I feel we also need addressed at the school, but I'm not going to ask you to cover those things. But who among your clients, listen to this, among the company's clients, who do you think we can reach out to with your blessing that when we mention that you have connected us to them, they may listen to us in a positive way and may be in a position to support our school. So it's actually quite broad, but the shortest answer to your question is there are these handbooks, and I'll make this information available. I hope it helps. I'll make the information available so that you can go to those publishers of those books to get those, to see if those handbooks are still being published. They use the one that I know called CSI handbook. It used to come out every year. Hopefully it still comes out. So it's got a list of all these big companies in South Africa. So-and-so is focusing on these types of things. This is how much they spend on that. So it makes it easy to reach out to them. But I would also add that, so that you don't get thrown in the CSI pile, it may also make sense to reach out to companies that have absolutely nothing to do with having a CSI that focuses on that particular thing. You can reach out to them purely based on a story. One of the things about research that I'm going to talk to you guys about is the importance of when you read newspapers or business magazines, when you page through this thing, just watch what they're talking about there. Because some of the things that they talk about may align with the things you want. How I got to partner with the JSE, it was literally by accident. It's not like I knew that I was looking after them. It's that I saw a story where they were saying we're struggling to promote our text. I'm like, I want to write a book. Maybe I can align my book with helping them. So my approach was purely based on what they said. So right now you've got magazines, you've got newspapers, even the old ones that you may have, you can actually start looking at, listen to what the CEOs are quoted as saying, the business development people, whoever's representing a company, what are some of the pains that they're talking about? Because nothing beats entering a conversation that somebody's already having in their head. Anyway, I'm just watching time. I could obviously teach a whole class on this, but I also don't want to waste too much time, or I'd rather not waste. I don't want to take too much time since we still have other questions, but we're going to unpack these as we go as well. Some of these I'm going to cover, obviously, in the upcoming modules. I hope I've answered, at least I've given you a first step in terms of your questions that you asked me. So I think let's go to the second question. So I've got your three questions here. There's this one where you say, I have two clients and I want to...
I want to try and end the relationships, Sia, because yes. These are my 350 per hour clients.
Okay, let's keep this one because I've got a few questions which I'd like to ask you directly on WhatsApp, and then I'll do a recording where I tackle this question. Let's look at number three. It is occurring to me that there's a serious shift that I will need to unlearn very deep-seated ways of operating / doing most things and relearn new ways. How would you suggest I do this with the necessary speed without defaulting to self and trying to explain that which I should not explain, especially to myself? And then you say, context, I work in a service-oriented environment. I have for two decades. My wiring is a certain way, and I can see how it will limit my learning / development. I have had to go back several times to commandment three, being okay with a no. Phew, this is huge for me and requires a serious change of mindset. I like this question. When I saw it, when your email came through, I liked it. Let me answer it backwards. Let's start with the no thing. Commandment three, because I think it's a new kind of mindset for a lot of people. So let me go, I'm just putting out the notes here for commandment three, so that just to give context when someone is listening to this and they don't have this in front of them. It says, thou shalt go for no. And then it says, never fear no. At the beginning of the negotiation, tell them it's okay for them to say no to your proposal. Yes. So Let me talk about this a little bit. Whenever we approach proposals or sales or anything, we are going into those things because we want to get the sale. You know, nobody says I'm going to sell because I want them to say no. We're going there because we want them to say, hell yeah, I want what you said, right? But the thing is, when we are fixated on yes, we've got a number of disadvantages. One of the disadvantages being the neediness. We get too attached to that yes, basically. But when we hear when we say to someone at the beginning that it's okay to say no, there are a number of amazing psychological things we are doing. One, we are telling ourselves, we are reminding ourselves rather, that what I'm here asking for is something I don't have right now. And my life has actually been fine, even though I haven't had this thing, I've been alive. It's not like not having it has killed me. That's one. Two, there's a real possibility that, let's just say there's a 50-50 chance that I'll get a yes or a no. So you are just accepting that, acknowledging that no is a real possibility here. No is a real, I hope you can hear me, so I just saw a message saying storm. Oh, there we go. I just got a message from Flo saying there's a storm. So I think she got kicked out of the class. So the second thing is that there's a real possibility that these people will say no. So you are just reminding yourself that a no is a possibility. You know, because what's the point of being attached to a yes that is not guaranteed when it could go either way? So just allow yourself to accept and relax. So thanks, noted, I got your message. Welcome back on the call. So just when you say it's okay for them to say no to you, you're not telling them something they don't know. They actually know that they can say no. In fact, they probably intend to say no. But now you are reminding yourself, first of all, to say no is a possibility. And I'm okay with that because it could go either way. And what that does, it actually reduces your neediness. It actually reduces your neediness. But now what does it do to them? What does it do to them? What it does to them is that, first of all, it kind of throws them off a little bit, because imagine when, in fact, I said this to you guys as well, when you wanted to be on the program, one of the options I gave you was that you don't have to be in the program. I never once pleaded with you, you know, twisted your arm, you know, begged you and all of that. I never did. I just said, look, this is what the program's about. This is what we're going to be doing. Look, you don't have to. You can come in, you cannot come in. It's really, you never, at no point did any of you feel like there was pressure to be part of this, because I basically did the same thing, because I knew that I didn't need you or anybody in the program, you know, because what's the point of needing people, right? And I communicated that in whatever words I used, but it was a case of it's your call, you decide, but the program is here. So what that does is that the person who's buying, they relax, and they feel unpressured. And also they tend to subconsciously respect you, because you are actually not needy, you know? You are not needy. So it almost takes away whatever carrot they were gonna use to kind of induce your neediness, because you're not needy. Like, it's hard to try to negotiate with someone who's not needy, you know, who's willing to just get up and go. And I've done this in meetings where people would have invited me because they want to work with us, and I would talk about the great things we do, and then I say, gentlemen, time up, I gotta go. And they would stop you, wait, aren't you gonna tell us how you work? And I was like, why? You know, or in some cases they would say, aren't you gonna tell us what do you sell? I'm like, what do you guys want to buy? You know, literally I'd say, what do you want to buy? In some cases, I genuinely don't want to work with them. I've decided, in fact, there are five things. There are many things I consider when I negotiate with people, but there are five non-negotiables for me, which influence the people I work with, how I work. The first one is likability. Do I like you? That's important. Sometimes we forget, sometimes we allow ourselves, and I'm not talking about the corporates we work for, but I'm talking about our own businesses. It's so important to work with people you like. So for me, the liking thing is a big thing. The moment when I talk to somebody, I've got a funny feeling that there's something I just don't like about their attitude, it's unlikely I'll work with them. I don't care how much they have to pay. So that's the first thing. The second thing for me is values. Are their values aligned with mine? Is there a congruence of values there? You know, because if there are people that are just a bit dodgy and a bit, you know, weird or scammy type, or people that I feel they just don't have the right kind of integrity, I tend to want to distance myself early from those relationships. Number three is fun. This is a huge one for me. I love this that I'm doing right now with you guys, because it's a lot of fun for me. It actually energizes me when I do this. You know, when I talk to people, when I teach, when I share, and it's even better when people share their results from something I taught them. It just shoots me through the roof. So that's fun for me. And then the fourth thing that I consider when I work with people, my brain is starting to freeze. I'm putting myself under pressure because I didn't think that I was going to talk about this today. The other thing that I consider are results, of course, you know, to say, can I actually help? You know, can I actually, am I comfortable? Can I feel it in the pit of my stomach that I understand their problem and I know I can help them? When I'm comfortable there, you know, I feel grounded. I feel both my feet firmly on the ground that, okay, I've got this. I can lead these people and I can help this person rather. And then the sixth thing, particularly in the main line of my business, number five, is can we make a lot of money? Like, is there a scope that we can actually make a lot of money? Not just from what I'm doing with them now, but let's assume that they do well with this. And then we can we grow? Let's say you guys, I'll use you as an example. You're coming in, you've got these new companies that you're right at the ground level of starting. So even though I didn't really think about this when you guys were signing up for this, but for the purpose of this example, let's just say one of the things I would consider is if I can get you guys, let's say, to 100K per month with, let's say, this program, you know, that's not my commitment, of course, but I'm just saying, let's assume that we get there from something you learned from me. What that would do is that it kind of makes you a different kind of a potential ongoing client for the higher level things I can teach you, you know, to say, maybe now we need to help them redesign their business so that it's a million rand a month type business, you know. So the possibilities are endless. Your businesses, like any business, they could become anything in the future, you know. So you're probably not the best example for this part, but I hope you get the point. But some of the clients I meet, they're already making millions and millions and millions. They come to me, like one of the universities have a research division that they commercialize. They do about 40 million rand a year. And when I looked at it, I was like, in 3 years, we could take this to 100 million. You see? So when I looked at that, I was like, when all the right boxes were ticked, the liking factor, the values factor, the fun factor, the I can help them factor, then I was like, gee, if we could take this to 100 million, I could, you know, I could make probably 6 million from this, or between 6 and 10 million for my business just by helping them get there. Now we can both make money. I hope that makes sense. So so the whole thing of not being needy. And another thing about the no is understanding that you always hear more no's than yeses. You do. You always hear more no's than yeses. Another thing about no is the fact that no, relaxing and being comfortable in the word no is actually a preparation for an upcoming and an ongoing negotiation. Because there can be no negotiation if someone says yes, yes. But if they say no, at the very least, they have to own the no by saying, these are the reasons why we can't accept this, which gives you the necessary intel or intelligence which you could use to come back to the same people to say, well, other words, objections. Yeah, you objected on these things, but here's how we can tackle those things, right? Now, it opens up a further engagement. So no is actually never a bad thing, because you can always, it always gives you more information that you can use to come back to negotiate with the same group of people, or you could use it in your next, when you do your own debriefing. Why did I lose that deal? These are the things they didn't like. Oh, okay, how am I gonna deal with these things in my next conversation? So those are all things that benefit you. You know, another thing about no versus yes is that sometimes we've got targets. When you've got a sales target, let's say of 100,000 a month, and you sell something for 10 grand, you say to yourself, I just need to close 10 deals. Let's just say you close 10 deals in your first 2 weeks of the month. You reach your target. What does a typical person do? A typical person will start resting and say, oh, I can party now for 2 weeks to do nothing because I reached my target. But what if you were going for no? You say, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm not going to focus too much on 100,000. But what I'm going to focus on is getting 50 no's this month. Imagine that, you know? By the way, I've taught clients to do this, to say, rather set a target for the number of no's you're gonna get. Let me tell you what that does. When you've got a target for a lot of no's, it guarantees that you're gonna talk to a lot of people. If your target is 50 no's, you know, rather than just 10 yeses, but 50 no's, let's say you normally close one out of every five. You just say, I need to close five, just 10 deals. But what if you switch that and say, I'm just gonna go for 50 no's. You make a list of the 50 people you're gonna contact, and you're going there with the mind that says, I know that 40 of them are going to tell me no, right? So even if the first 10 people, let's say your first 30 people, you get your 10 yeses, but you still haven't reached your target, you know? So out of 30, you got 10 yeses, you got 20 no's, 20 no's, 10 yeses. You still have to go for another 30 no's. Now that your goal is another 30 no's, there's a possibility that within those 30 people you want to talk to, there are other 10 people that could say yes. You know, so when you go for no, you actually commit to taking action rather than committing to a result. The only result is this month I want to tick that I had 50 no's. You know, and then when you look at the yeses you got, in most cases you would have gotten more yeses than you would have gotten if you were just going after yes. Another benefit of going for no is that it actually thickens your skin. You know, because the reason why we've got such a thin skin as people is because we don't hear no enough. But if no is part of your plan, because you will get no's, you might as well embrace it. I mean, why just cry over it instead of just embracing it? So what it does, it actually makes your skin thicker. No doesn't scare you anymore because you've had all versions of no. You've had all versions of no. You know, so the way I approach that, I almost look at every transaction as a vote. You know, if you think about the fact that in America, half of the people that vote, they vote for the other side. So like President Obama, half of Americans, they voted against him, but he still became president. Trump, more than half of Americans voted against him, and he still became president. So what if we could look at yeses and no's as votes, to say one man, one vote. So every person who says no, it's just one vote, you know? One vote. The beauty about business is that these votes make us money. Every yes is cash in the bag. Every no is a little hurt that you could just have, you know, have a glass of your favorite drink and forget about it and move on. But every year, even though years has come few and far between, when they come, that's cash in the bank, you know. So for me, I would take no's all day long, you know, as long as I know that the more no's I take, the more yeses come as a result of my commitment to that, to a certain number of no's per month. I hope that's a big lesson for you guys. And so those are my answers. Let me just have, oh, sorry, I missed your comment there. So, Ash, thanks, we listen. You gotta go. Okay, Ash. In fact, Ash, before you go, just unmute yourself. Give me one question that I can answer, and then you can catch up this later.
Thanks, Sia. That was very rich insights. So the one thing that you made me think about in my role with the, you know, as vice chair on the school governing body, is I actually thought about possibly stepping off from the school governing body and approaching the school to, you know, fulfill almost like a sponsorship role for them. Possibly getting paid a cut for, you know, if let's say, for example, I raise R1 million for them. It's R1 million that they didn't have before. And then negotiating with them for like a reasonable fee in return for doing that for them.
I agree. Or they may not want a fee, but they may be very open to a percentage of what you bring in.
Yeah, a percentage. That's what I was thinking about.
Oh, okay.
So great. That was an aha moment for me.
I'm happy to hear that.
And I actually think that I will probably create more impact for the school in that kind of a capacity than, you know, giving my inputs on like various things, you know, because I mean, what better way than to bring in money for the school?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Totally agree.
Okay, so, cool, man.
I know you have to go, but before you go, I want to suggest something to you guys and tell me what you guys think. Because you have to go and we didn't have time to do the intros, I'm wondering if I shouldn't add everybody's profile on our page where you guys are getting your materials. Maybe what I can do, I've got closed profile with their permission, I can load it there so that other members can see who does what. They can read your whole bio and see what you do. If you're open to publish,
I think that's a great idea, because as I was listening to Chloe, you know, I had the idea that we can share resources with one another. Help one another's businesses.
Great. That would be nice, yeah.
So send me yours, Ash, and then I'll load it, and then I'll ask other people as well to send me theirs, and then I'll just load them up.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much, to both of you. Cool.
Thank you. Good evening. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Okay, bye. Okay, see you next week. Bye.
Yeah, cool. Bye-bye. All right. So I've answered two of your questions. Do you have any other questions?
I didn't hear the second answer. I think that's when I started to have problems. So you were saying I must just go ahead and do it openly, because I didn't think that there would be anything wrong with just talking about it. And
you didn't hear which one?
The one where I'm thinking of ending clients, ending relationships.
What I said, let's skip that one because I have
questions
to ask you privately. And then just to get context of what.
Okay, that's fine.
I just didn't want to ask it on the call because I felt there were specifics that I would love to have. And then once I've gotten that from you, maybe via WhatsApp, I'll do a recording
where I
answer this question and I'll just load it up.
Brilliant. No, thank you so much. Then the last one, really, I think we've touched on, it was really just the whole aha of, okay, I have to unlearn and learn. Sure. It was really just maybe what I was asking in the question is, how would you suggest that I do that with the speed that I need to do it with? Making sure that I'm, because I'm aware of it, how can I help myself to just do it, you know, and not delay it?
I think the key is that the difference when you sell as a role in your company, in the company you work for, and when you sell for yourself, there's a dimension that gets added when you sell for yourself, because essentially you are selling yourself. So rejection is very personal. People are rejecting you.
Yes.
But it's easy in the sense that there's a big authentic factor that you bring in by being you. Because when people want to do business with you, they're actually buying you in the true sense. You know what I mean? They buy into you, into like what I was saying about values. The five things that are non-negotiables. I don't know if you were here when I spoke about that.
Yes.
But then to do anything, in fact, the thing about, at least from the conversations we've had, where you are, and I think what is needed for you is obviously this kind of doesn't really relate to partnerships, but it does, it relates to every business. So even other people, although it doesn't relate to partnerships, but it relates to business, it's important to move with speed in terms of acquiring clients. And yes, the whole concept, what I've just given you about embracing no, the more people you speak to, and you also need to remember that what is business? It's just helping people.
True.
I always say most entrepreneurs, their biggest problem is that they are too scared of money. You know, the whole idea that they'll be asking people for money, it kind of makes them a bit uncomfortable. But if they were running a nonprofit, they would not hesitate to go and tell people that you need to support this cause, you know, support
this
cause, blah, 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 you know. But when it comes to their businesses, they tend to feel like they have to cheapen themselves, to hide because they'll get paid. There's just something that's uncomfortable about money. So I always say, don't forget about money. Focus on service. You know, focus on changing people's outcomes. You know, again, when how you and I got to work together, all I did was to say, hey guys, I'm serving on this day, I'm sharing some stuff, you know. Anyone who's interested, come. And then you were there and other people were there. And then after that, I said, if you guys like what I've shared, I've got something else that I think can help you, you know. And then people reached out, and then I spoke to people and I said, this is how I can help. And then people made decisions. So all I did was to focus on sharing. I didn't send an email and say, I'm selling something, I've got a program that's coming up, this is the price, you know, whatever. Yeah. I just focused on sharing, on serving. So I would look at what you have, which when we've got time, I think we can touch on, like we did before we started the program, because I think the more of that you can do, when people feel that you are somebody that can help them, because that's really key. When people feel that you are the person who can help them, the whole money thing, you know, and the conversation just takes care of itself. It flows, particularly when you know what to focus on, which are those two things I mentioned earlier, which is, what is their cost of not doing this? You know, sometimes I hurt when people don't do business with me, not because I didn't get the deal, but I hurt for their sake. I'm like, oh my God, I wish they had accepted my offer, because I know what they would have gotten from it. I've had people.
I hear you.
I've had people who had an opportunity to work with me, and then they say no. Of course, nobody really says no. They come up with a reason why they can't. Not on a good time. They don't have money right now. Maybe the price is too high for them. Even though they may have the money, but they think they don't. It looks too good in their bank account, I guess. But then I meet them a year or two later,
and they're worse off.
And their situation,
well, relatively, yeah.
And it just breaks my heart. So when you can feel from that authentic place, people feel that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. I sent you a photo that I had, well, that I still have on my company profile, whatever, pick for what.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you got to see it. It is
that one pager.
No. An email earlier this afternoon.
No, I got. It looks like a picture from your cell phone.
Yes, so I still have it on, but in my mind, when I look at it now that I know better, it still has too many things. What's your take? So I was saying, please critique it so that I know whether to remove it or to just leave the certified coach story and nothing else. Because again, because it still specifies the things that I want people to know that I do, it still puts it as a commodity, I think. It still commoditizes whatever I offer.
It does.
What is your take? Because it still says, I do change management. I do this. Da, 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 da. So it still boxes me back to whoever other Joseph or other Joseph coach is doing, which is what I'm trying to run away from.
Correct. No, it absolutely does that. It looks nice. The picture's there. Obviously very friendly. You look beautiful. So that's inviting for somebody to look at what this is about. And it's nicely done. It's not cluttered. It's easy to read. But exactly what you said, because all it does is like tick, one-on-one coaching, tick, coaching and business advice, tick, speaking engagement, tick, facilitation, tick, meditation, tick, you know what I mean? But it says nothing, you know, to the person.
Yeah.
So, because think about it. When people are looking for a speaker, and I'm tackling this even though it doesn't necessarily relate to this week's questions, but I know that a lot of people on this call can benefit from this. So what this does is, let's look at speaking engagement. Nobody books somebody because they speak.
They speak.
You know what I mean?
So true. Okay, I speak. Everyone speaks.
So people are looking for a speaker on something.
Something, yeah.
Even one-on-one coaching. Nobody wakes up in the morning saying, I definitely need one-on-one coaching. One-on-one coaching on
what? Yeah.
What results are they looking for? What outcomes are they looking for? What pain are they experiencing right now that one-on-one coaching can help? In fact, one-on-one coaching is not even a thing that can help somebody. What will help somebody is the outcome of coaching. One-on-one just happens to be one of the vehicles. So what if you just coach all the people who have that type of problem as a group? It makes no difference than if it was just one-on-one. It's not like one-on-one is better.
It's special.
Contrary to what most coaches believe, they think, one-on-one coaching. They think people wake up and So now what do you do? That's the question. Look, I don't have a straight answer for you, but what I do, like I've got so many, there are so many things that I have as tools.
I need to urgently do something because, okay, like now I need to remove that, put in something, you know, because again, people are phoning on the basis of that, but again, it's the harder conversation of now saying, no, but that's not what I offer. So,
it works, clearly. I mean, but why change it? Because if there are people who are calling on the basis of this, then I wouldn't change it, but I would create other things. I would create a coaching tool. Maybe I would have another one-pager on coaching. So I would have a one-pager on each of these things. Let's look at a company like Unilever, since they are one of your clients, for instance.
Yes.
Procter & Gamble. I like to talk about Procter & Gamble, but they kind of do the same stuff. The way those companies are structured is that they've got brands, let's say in the detergent space, they would have multiple brands of, you know, washing powder, for instance. But each of these is targeting a particular target market,
yeah.
And they've got a whole team that is all about that brand. And that brand is treated like a company in its own right.
Yes.
In fact, in the marketplace, they can have two brands that are rivaling each other. People say, I don't use this brand, I use that brand, not knowing that they all come from the same company, thinking that, you know, it's almost like you were supporting Kaiser Chiefs or Orlando Pirates. You know what I mean?
Correct.
Vodacom still benefits, even if they can be fighting and say, Chiefs is better than Pirates, but Vodacom still wins because they sponsor both sides of that equation. So how does that apply to your profile here? You've got all of these things. So imagine if each of these was a company. Let's say you had a, I'll use what you wrote here, a company called One-on-One Coaching. What would that company look like? And what would distinguish that company? And then let's say you had another company called Coaching and Business Advice, which is your second bullet point there. What would that company look like? What can you say that would make that stand out and make somebody say, wow, I've got that problem and I want to talk to these guys? Not knowing that
these are the same people. I hear you. I'm with you.
From their perspective, in a way where when they see this, or they see more than just speaking engagements, but they see something that makes them want to engage with you to invite you to speak on their platform because you're touching on a topic that is relevant.
That resonates. I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Thank you so much. I hear you.
So I wouldn't, if, as you say, you're getting calls from this, if it works, don't change it, but just create more stuff. Then people can find you in all these other different ways.
I'm with you. Thank you so much. I hear you. This is exciting. Thank you, Sia. I know we passed the time, but thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
It is my pleasure. So we're closing today's session, and thank you and everybody.
Bye, Danki. Thank you. Good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.